forward again. Grimm swallowed and braced himself for the questions he knew would follow.
"Why is not about you at all, Grimm?" she said wonderingly. "This banner doesn't say, 'Welcome home, son.' It says, 'Welcome home, Gavril.'"
She paused, nibbling her lip.
"Who's Gavril? And how could you manage to read it from so far away, yet mistake the word son for Gavril? The words don't look anything alike."
"Oh, must you be so logical," he said with a sigh.
He reconsidered turning Occam about and tearing off in the other direction without offering an explanation, but he knew it would be only a temporary reprieve. Ultimately, Jillian would bring him back, one way or another. It was time to face his demons, apparently all of them at the same time, for winding down the road toward him was a parade of people, replete with a band of pipes and drums and, if his memory could be trusted on anything at all, the one in front bore a marked resemblance to his Da. And so did the man who rode beside him. Grimm's gaze darted back and forth between them, searching for some clue that might tell him which one was his father. Suddenly, a worse realization struck him, one which, stunned to temporary senselessness by the condition of his home, he'd managed to overlook entirely. The moment he'd glimpsed the thriving Tuluth, the shock of it all had caused his deepest fear to recede deceptively to the back of his mind. Now it returned with the force of a tidal wave, flooding him with quiet desperation. If his memory could be trusted, and that did seem to be the question of the day, familiar faces were approaching, which meant some of the people riding toward them knew he was a berserker. In an instant, they could betray his terrible secret to Jillian, and he would lose her forever. Chapter 29. Grimm drew Occam to such an abrupt halt that the stallion spooked and reared. Mustering the most soothing sounds he could manage in his agitated condition, Grimm calmed the startled gray and slipped from its back.
"What are you doing?"
Jillian was bewildered by his rapid dismount. Grimm studied the ground intently.
"I need you to remain here, lass. Come forward when I beckon, but no sooner. Promise me you'll wait until I summon you."
Jillian studied his bent head. After a brief internal debate, she reached out and caressed his dark hair. He turned his face into her hand and kissed her palm.
"I haven't seen these people in 15 years, Jillian."
"I'll stay. I promise."
He gave her a wordless thank you with his eyes. He was torn by conflicting emotions, yet he knew he had to approach alone. Only when he had wrung an oath from the villagers to protect his secret would he lead Jillian into the city and address her comfort. Had she been dangerously ill, he would have risked losing her love to save her life. But she was hardly incapacitated, and although he regretted any discomfort she might suffer, he was not willing to face the fear and revulsion he'd glimpsed in his dreams. He couldn't afford to take any chances. Satisfied that she would wait at this distance until he summoned her, Grimm turned and sprinted down the dirt road toward the approaching melee. His heart seemed to have lodged in the vicinity of his throat, and he felt as if he were being wrenched in two. Behind him was the woman he loved. In front of him was the past he'd vowed never to confront by light of day. At the forefront of the cluster rode two men of equal height and girth, both with thick shocks of black hair, liberally threaded with silver. Both had strong, craggy faces and clefts in their proud chins. Both had a similar expression of joy on their features. What was going on here? Grimm wondered. It was as if everything he'd ever believed had been a lie. Tuluth had been destroyed, but Tuluth was a thriving city. His Da had been insane, but someone with a stable mind and a strong back had rebuilt this land. His Da seemed extraordinarily happy to see him, and though Grimm had not intended to return, his father apparently had been expecting him. How? Why? Thousands of questions flashed through his mind in the short time it took him to span the distance between them. The parade of people began roaring as he drew near, their faces wreathed in smiles. How was a man expected to walk into such an exuberant crowd with hatred in his heart? And why were they so damned happy to see him? He stopped his sprint a dozen feet from the front line. Unable to hold still, he resorted to jogging in place, breathing harshly, not from the run, but from the dreaded encounter to come. The two men who looked so similar broke away from the crowd. One of them raised a hand to the entourage, and the crowd fell silent, maintaining a respectful distance as they rode forward. Grimm sneaked a glance over his shoulder to make sure Jillian hadn't followed him. With relief, he saw she had obeyed his command, although if she leaned any farther over Occam's head toward the crowd, he'd have to peel her from the road.
Gavril!
The deep voice so like his own whipped his head around. He stared up at the two men, uncertain which one had spoken.
Grimm,
he corrected instantly. The man on the right erupted into an immediate bluster.
What the blethering hell kind of name is Grimm? Why not be naming yourself depressed or melancholy? Nay, I have it. Woe begone.
He cast a disgusted glance at Grimm and snorted.
It's better than MacIliac,
Grimm said stiffly.
And it's not Grimm with one M. It's Grimm with two. Well, why would you be changing your name at all, lad?
The man on the left did little to disguise his wounded expression. Grimm searched their faces, trying desperately to decide which one was his father. He didn't have the faintest clue what he might do when he figured it out, but he'd really like to know which one to treat to the venom he'd been storing for years uncounted. No, not uncounted, he corrected himself. 15 years of angry words he wanted to fling at the man, words that had festered for half his lifetime.
Who are you?
He demanded of the man who'd most recently spoken. The man turned to his companion with a mournful look.
Who am I? He's asking me, Balder. Can you be believing that? Who am I?
Well, at least he didn't spit, Balder said mildly.
You're Ronan,
Grimm accused. If the one was named Balder, the other had to be his da, Ronan MacIliac.
I'm not Ronan to you,
the man exclaimed indignantly.
I'm your da. You're no father to me,
Grimm remarked in a voice so chill it vied with the bitterest Highland wind. Ronan gazed accusingly at Balder.
I told you so.
Balder shook his head, arching a bushy brow.
He still didn't spit.
What the hell does spitting have to do with anything?
Well, lad, Balder drawled. That's the excuse I'm looking for to tie your spiteful arse up and drag you back to the castle, where I can be pounding some good common sense and respect for your elders into you. You think you could?
Grimm challenged coolly. His dangerous mix of emotions clamored lustily for a fight. Balder laughed, the sound a joyous shout rumbling from his thick chest.
I love a good fight, lad. But a man like me could eat a pup like you in one snap of his jaws.
Grimm leveled a dark look at Ronan.
Does he know what I am?
Arrogance underscored the question.
Do you know what I am?
Balder countered softly. Grimm's eyes swept back to his face.
What do you mean?
He asked so quickly it came out sounding like one word. He studied Balder intently. Mocking, ice-blue eyes met his levelly.
Impossible!
In all his years, he'd never encountered another berserker. Balder shook his head and sighed. He exchanged glances with Ronan.
The lad is dense, Ronan. I'm telling you, he's thick through and through.
Ronan puffed himself up indignantly.
He is not. He's my son.
The lad doesn't know the first thing about himself. Even after all these...
Well, how could he be in that, and any dolt should have figured? That doesn't mean he's dense. Hold your wisht!
Grimm roared.
There's no need to be roaring my head off, boy, Balder rebuked. It's not as if you're the only one with a berserker's temper here.
I am not a boy.
I am not a lad. I am not a dolt, Grimm said evenly,
determined to take control of the erratic conversation. There would be time later to discover how Balder had become a berserker.
And when the woman who is behind me approaches, you will kindly make it clear to the servants, the villagers, and the entire clan that I am not a berserker. Do you understand me?
Not a berserker?
Balder's eyebrows rose.
Not a berserker?
Ronan's brow furrowed.
Not a
berserker.
But you are,
Ronan argued obtusely. Grim glared at Ronan.
But she doesn't know that. And if she discovers it, she'll leave me. And if she leaves me, I'll have no choice but to kill you both,
Grim said matter-of-factly.
Well,
Balder huffed, deeply offended.
There's no need to be getting nasty about things, lad. I'm sure we'll find a way to sort things out.
I doubt it, Balder. And if you call me lad one more time, you're going to have a problem.
I'll spit and give you the reason you've been looking for, and we'll just see if an aging berserker can take one in his prime.
Two aging berserkers,
Ronan corrected proudly. Grim's head snapped around, and he stared at Ronan. Identical ice-blue eyes. The day kept dishing out one bewildering revelation after another. He found sanctuary in sarcasm.
What the hell is this, the Valley of the Berserkers?
Something like that, Gavril,
Balder muttered, dodging a nudge from Ronan.
My name is Grim.
How do you plan to be explaining the name on the banners to your wife?
Ronan asked.
She's not my wife,
Grim evaded. He hadn't figured that out yet.
What?
Outraged, Ronan nearly rose to his feet in the stirrups.
You've brought a woman here in dishonor? No son of mine cavorts with his mate without offering her the proper union.
Grim buried his hands in his hair. His world had gone mad. This was the most absurd conversation he could recall holding.
I haven't had the time to marry her yet. I only recently abducted her. Abducted her!
Ronan's nostrils flared.
With her consent,
Grim said defensively.
I thought there was a wedding at Caithness,
Ronan argued.
There nearly was, but not to me. And there will be one as soon as I can. Lack of time is the only reason she's not my wife. And you,
he pointed furiously at Ronan,
you haven't been a father to me for 15 years, so do not think you can start acting like one now. I haven't been a father to you because you wouldn't come home. You know why I wouldn't come home!
Grim spoke furiously, his eyes blazing. Ronan flinched. He drew a deep breath, and when he spoke again, he seemed deflated by Grim's anger.
I know. I failed you,
he said, his eyes brimful of regret.
Failed me, is putting it lightly,
Grim muttered. He was badly thrown off balance by his Da's response. He'd expected the old man to rage right back, maybe attack him like the batty bastard he was. But there was genuine regret in his gaze. How was he supposed to deal with that? If Ronan had raged back, he could have released his pent-up anger by fighting with him. But Ronan didn't. He simply sat his horse and gazed sadly down at him, and it made Grim feel even worse.
Jillian is ill, Grim said gruffly. She needs a warm place to stay.
She's ill? Balder trumpeted. By Odin's spear, lad, did you have to wait until now to see the most important thing?
Lad.
The way Grim uttered the single word made his threat clear. But Balder was unruffled, his mouth twisted with a sneer.
Listen up, son of the MacIlliac, you do not frighten me. I'm far too old to be put off by a young pup's growl. You won't let me call you by your God-given name, and I refuse to call you that ridiculous appellation you've chosen, so it's either going to be lad or it's going to be arsehole. Which do you prefer?
The older man's grin was menacing. Grim caught himself on the verge of a faint smile. If he hadn't been so hell-bent on hating this place, he would have liked blustering old Balder. The man commanded respect and clearly took guff from no one.
You can call me lad, on one condition, he relented. Take care of my woman, and keep my secret, and make sure the villagers do the same.
Ronan and Balder exchanged glances and sighed.
Oh, done.
Welcome home, lad,
Balder added. Grim rolled his eyes.
Aye, welcome,
Ronan began, but Grim raised a warning finger.
And you, old man, he said to Ronan. If I were you, I'd be giving me a lot of breathing room,
he warned. Ronan opened his mouth, then closed it, his blue eyes dark with pain. Chapter 30. Jillian couldn't stop smiling. It was nearly impossible not to in the midst of such excitement. How Grimm managed to continue looking so somber was beyond her comprehension. She spared a glance at him, which she nearly begrudged, because everywhere else she looked she found something enchanting, and Grimm looked so miserable it depressed her. She knew she should feel more compassion for his plight, but it was difficult to feel empathy when his family was so overjoyed to welcome him back into the fold. And what a magnificent fold it was. Gavril, she corrected herself silently. Rather than motioning her to join them after he'd greeted his da, he'd sprinted back to get her so they could ride in together. Surrounded by the cheering crowd, he'd explained to her that when he'd left Toulouse years ago, he'd assumed a new name. His real name, although he insisted she continue calling him Grimm, was Gavril Roderick Icarus MacIliac. She sighed dreamily. Jillian Alana MacIliac. Said aloud it was a tumble of L's that rolled euphonically. She had no doubt that Grimm would marry her once they'd settled in. Grimm tightened his grip on her hand and whispered her name to get her attention.
Jillian, come back from wherever you are. Baldur's going to show us to our chambers, and we'll get you warm and fed.
Oh, I feel much better, Grimm, she said absently, marveling over a beautiful sculpture that adorned the hall. She trundled after Baldur and an assortment of maids, happily holding Grimm's hand.
This castle is enormous, breathtaking. How could you have ever thought it was dark and dreary?
He gave her a glum look.
I haven't a blethering clue, he muttered.
Here's your room, Gavril, Baldur began. Grimm, lad.
Baldur stared him down levelly.
And Mary here will see Jillian to hers, he said pointedly. What?
Grimm was momentarily dumbfounded. Now that she was his, how could he sleep without Jillian in his arms?
Room, Baldur gestured impatiently. Yours?
He turned abruptly to a dainty maid.
And Mary here will show Jillian to hers.
His blue eyes reflected a cool challenge.
I will see Jillian to hers myself,
Grimm begrudged after a tense pause.
As long as you see yourself right back out of it, lad, go on ahead. But you're not married, so dunna be thinking you can act like you are.
Jillian flushed.
No reflection on you, lass,
Baldur hastened to assure her.
I can see you're a fine lady. But this boy is randy as a goat around you, and it's plain to see. If he seeks the joys of wedded bliss, he can wed you. Without a wedding, he'll be having no bliss.
Grimm flushed.
Enough, Baldur.
Baldur arched a brow and frowned.
And try to be a bit nicer to your da, lad. The man did give you life, after all.
With that, he turned and blustered down the hall, his proud chin jutting like the prow of a ship breaking waves. Grimm waited until he had disappeared from sight, then sought directions from the maid.
I'll escort Jillian to her chambers,
he informed the elfin-looking Mary. To the cluster of maids, he said,
see to it that we have a steaming tub, and...
He glanced at Jillian worriedly.
What kind of food might your stomach tolerate, lass?
Anything and everything, Jillian thought. She was famished.
Lots,
she said succinctly. Grimm smiled faintly, finished giving the maids instructions, and escorted Jillian to her rooms. As they entered the rooms, Jillian exhaled a sigh of pleasure. Her chambers were every bit as luxuriously appointed as the rest of Maldaban. Four tall windows graced the west wall of the bedroom, and from there she could watch the sun set over the mountains. Snowy lambskin rugs covered the floors. The bed was carved of burnished cherry, that had been polished to a vibrant luster and canopied with sheer white linen. A cheery fire burned in an enormous fireplace.
How are you feeling, Jillian?
Grimm shut the door and drew her into his arms.
I'm much better now,
she assured him.
I know this must all be quite shocking.
Jillian kissed him, silencing further words. He seemed startled by the gesture, then kissed her back so urgently it caused her toes to curl with anticipation. She clung to the kiss, spinning it out as long as she could,
trying to imbue him with courage and love, for she suspected he'd be needing it. Then she forgot her noble intentions as desire sizzled between them. A sharp rap on the door dampened it quickly. Grim pulled back and stalked to the door, unsurprised to find Balder standing there.
"I forgot to tell you, lad, we have supper at 8, Balder said, peering beyond him at Gillian. "Has he been kissing you, lass? You just tell me and I'll take care of it."
Grim closed the door without replying and locked it. Balder sighed so loudly outside the door that Gillian nearly laughed. As Grim walked back to her side, she studied him. The strain of the day was evident. Even his usual proud posture seemed bowed. When she considered all the man had been through in the past few hours, she felt terrible. He was busy tending to her, when he could probably use nothing more greatly than some time alone to sort through all the shocks the day had delivered. She brushed his cheek with her hand.
"Grim, if you don't mind, do you think I could rest a bit before I meet any more people? Perhaps I could take dinner in my room tonight and face the castle tomorrow?"
She hadn't been wrong. His expression was a mixture of concern and relief.
"Are you certain you do not mind being on your own? Are you certain you're well enough?"
"Grim, I feel wonderful. Whatever was wrong with me this morning has passed. Now I'd like to relax, soak in a long bath, and sleep. I suspect you probably have people and places you'd like to reacquaint yourself with."
"You're remarkable. Do you know that, lass?"
He smoothed her hair and tucked a stray tendril behind her ear.
"I love you, Grim Roderick," she said intensely. "Go, meet your people and see your home. Take your time. I will always be here for you."
"What did I do to deserve you?"
The words exploded from him. She brushed her lips against his lightly.
"I ask myself the same question all the time."
"I want to see you tonight, Gillian. I need to see you."
"I'll leave my door unlocked."
She flashed him a dazzling smile that promised the moon and the stars when he came. He gave her one last tender look and left.
"Go to him. I can't,"
Ronan said urgently. The two men peered out the window at Grim, sprawled on the wall in front of the castle, gazing out over the village. Night had fallen, and tiny lights in the village twinkled like a reflection of the stars that dotted the sky. The castle had been constructed to provide an unimpeded view of the village. A wide stone terrace lined the perimeter, east and west. It sloped in tiers down to the fortifying walls, the terrace itself surrounded by a low wall at such a height that from atop it one could look straight out over the valley. Grim had been sitting alone on the wall for hours, alternating his gaze between the castle behind him and the valley before him.
"What would you like me to be saying?" Balder grunted. "He's your son, Ronan. You're going to have to speak with him at some point."
"He hates me. So speak with him and try to help him get past it." "It's not that easy,"
Ronan snapped. But in his blue eyes, Balder saw fear. Fear that if Ronan spoke with his son, he might lose him all over again. Balder eyed his brother for a moment and then sighed.
"Ah, I'll try, Ronan."
Grim watched the valley batten down for the night. The villagers had begun to light candles and pull shutters, and from his perch on the low wall he could hear the faint strains of parents calling their children into cozy cottages, and farmers rounding up animals before venturing to bed themselves. It was a scene of peace and harmony. He stole an occasional glance over his shoulder at the castle, but not one gargoyle lurked. It was possible, he conceded, that at 14 he'd been fanciful. It was possible that years of running and hiding had colored his perceptions until all seemed desolate and barren, even a past that had once been bright. His life had changed so abruptly on that fateful day, it might well have skewed his memories. He could accept that he'd forgotten what Tuluth was really like. He could accept that the castle had never been truly menacing. But what was he to make of his Da? He'd seen him with his own eyes, crouched over his mother's body. Had he, in his shock and grief, misconstrued that event too?
Once the possibility presented itself, he studied it from every angle, his confusion deepening. He'd found his Da in the South Gardens in the early morning, the time Jolin strolled the grounds and greeted the day. He'd been on his way to meet Aaron to go fishing. The scene was painstakingly etched on his mind. Jolin, beaten and battered, her face a mass of bruises. Ronan crouched above her, snarling, blood everywhere, and that damned incriminating knife in his hand.
"Beautiful, isn't it?"
Balder interrupted his internal debate.
"Aye,"
Grimm replied, mildly surprised Balder had joined him.
"I do not remember it like this, Balder."
Balder placed a comforting hand on his shoulder.
"That's because it wasn't always like this. Toluth has grown tremendously over the years, thanks to your Da's efforts."
"Come to think of it, I do not remember you either,"
Grimm said thoughtfully.
"Did I know you when I was a lad?"
"No. I've spent most of my life wandering. I visited Maldaban twice when you were young, but only briefly. 6 months ago the ship I was sailing broke up in a storm, washing me ashore old Alba. I figured that meant it was time to check on what remained of my clan. I'm your Da's older brother, but I had a fancy to see the world, so I bullied Ronan into being laird, and a fine one he's made."
Grimm scowled.
"That's debatable. Don't be so hard on Ronan, lad. He's wanted nothing more than for you to come home. Maybe your memories of him are as discolored as your memories of Toluth."
"Maybe,"
Grimm allowed tightly. "But maybe not." "Give him a chance. That's all I'm asking. Get to know him again and make a fresh judgment. There were things he didn't have time to explain to you before. Let him tell you now."
Grimm shrugged his hand off his shoulder.
"Enough, Balder. Leave me alone." "Promise me you'll give him a chance to talk to you, lad,"
Balder persisted, undaunted by Grimm's dismissal.
"I haven't left yet, have I?"
Balder inclined his head and retreated.
"Well, that didn't last long,"
Ronan complained.
"I said my piece. Now do your part," Balder grumbled.
"Tomorrow,"
Ronan procrastinated. Balder glared.
"You know it's foolish to try talking about things when people are tired, and the lad must be exhausted, Balder."
"Berserkers only get tired when they've been in a rage,"
Balder said dryly.
"Quit acting like my older brother,"
Ronan snapped.
"Well, quit acting like my younger brother."
Two pairs of ice-blue eyes battled, and Balder finally shrugged.
"If you won't face that problem, then turn your mind to this one. Mary overheard Jillian telling the lad she'd leave her door unlocked. If we do not come up with something, that lad of yours will be sampling the pleasures without paying the price."
"But he's already sampled them, we know that."
"That doesn't make it right, and being denied may encourage him to wither all the sooner,"
Balder pointed out.
"What do you suggest? Lock her in the tower? The boy's a berserker, he'll get past anything."
Balder thought a moment, then grinned.
"He won't be getting past righteous indignation, will he now?"
The hour was past midnight when Grimm hastened down the corridor to Jillian's chambers. Mary had assured him that Jillian passed a restful evening with no further bouts of illness. She'd eaten like a woman famished, the elfin maid had said. He let his lips curve in the full smile he felt whenever he thought of Jillian. He needed to touch her, to tell her that he wanted to marry her if she would still have him. He longed to confide in her. She had a logical mind. Perhaps she could help him see things he couldn't make sense of by dint of being too near the subjects involved. He stood firm on his position that she must never know what he really was, but he could talk with her about much of what had happened, or seemed to have happened, 15 years ago, without betraying his secret. His gait quickened as he turned down the hall leading to her chambers, and he nearly sprinted around the corner. He halted abruptly when he spotted Balder, energetically plastering a crack in the stone with a mixture of clay and crushed stone.
"What are you doing here?"
Grimm scowled, indignantly.
"It's the middle of the night."
Balder shrugged innocently.
"Tending this castle is a full-time job. Fortunately, I do not require much sleep anymore. But come to think of it, what are you doing here? Your rooms are that way."
He leveled a half-full trowel in the other direction.
"In case you've forgotten, You wouldn't be looking to spoil an innocent young lass, now would ye?
A muscle twitched in Grimm's jaw.
Right. I must have gotten turned around.
Well, turn back around, lad. I expect I'll be working on this wall all night,
Balder said evenly. The whole night. 20 minutes later, Gillian poked her head out the door.
Balder!
She tugged her wrapper about her shoulders, peering at him peevishly. Balder grinned. She was lovely, flushed with sleep and obviously intent upon sneaking to Grimm's room.
Do you need something, lass?
What on earth are you doing?
He gave her the same lame excuse he'd given Grimm, and plastered heartily away.
Oh,
Gillian said in a small voice.
Do you wish me to escort you to the kitchens, lass? Can I give you a wee tour? I'm usually up all night, and the only thing I plan to do is plaster here. Wee cracks between the stones can become great cracks in the blink of an eye if left untended.
No, no,
Gillian waved him away.
I just heard a noise and wondered what it was.
She bid him good night and retreated. After she'd closed the door, Balder rubbed his eyes. By the saints, it was going to be a bloody long night. High above Tuluth, men gathered. Two of them broke away from the main group and moved toward the bluff, talking quietly.
The ambush didn't work, Connor. Why the hell did you send a mere score of men after a berserker?
Because you said he was probably on his way back to Tuluth,
Connor shot back.
We didn't wish to waste too many that we might be needing later. Besides, how many kegs of our black powder did you waste, only to be failing yourself?
Ramsay Logan scowled.
I hadn't thought it through as well as I should have. He won't escape next time.
Logan, if you kill Gavril MacIliac, there will be gold enough to last the rest of your days. We've been trying for years. He's the last one left that can breed. That we know of,
he added.
Are all their children born berserkers?
Ramsay watched the lights flicker and fade in the valley. Connor's lip curled in disgust.
Only the sons of direct descent from the laird. The curse confines itself to the primary paternal line. Over the centuries, our clan has gathered as much information about the MacIliac as we could. We know they have only one true mate, and once their mate dies, they remain celibate for the duration of their years. So, the old man is no longer a threat. To the best of our knowledge, Gavril is his only son. When he dies, that's the end. However, during various times over the centuries, they've managed to hide a few from us. That's why it's imperative that you get inside Castle Maldaban. I want the last MacIliac destroyed.
Do you suspect the castle is crawling with concealed blue-eyed boys? Is it possible Ronan had other sons besides Gavril?
We don't know,
Connor admitted.
Over the years, we've heard there is a hall, a place of pagan worship to Odin. It's supposed to be right in the heart of the mountain.
His face grew taut with fury.
Damned heathens! It's a Christian land now! We've heard they practice pagan ceremonies there, and one of the maids we captured, before she died, said that they record each and every one of their unholy spawn in that hall. You must find it and verify Gavril is the last.
You expect me to slip into the lair of such creatures and spy? How much gold did you say was in this for me?
Ramsay bargained shrewdly. Connor regarded him with the fanaticism of a purist.
If you prove he's the last and succeed in killing him, you can name your price.
I'll get into the castle and take that last berserker down,
Ramsay said with relish.
How? You failed 3 times now.
Don't worry. I'll not only get to the hall, I will take his mate, Gillian. It's possible she's pregnant.
By Christ's blessed tears!
Connor shuddered with disgust.
After you use her, kill her,
he ordered. Ramsay raised a hand.
No. We will wait to see if she's pregnant.
But she's been tainted,
I want her. She's part of my price, Ramsay insisted. If she's carrying his child, I'll keep her under close guard until she gives birth.
If it's a son, you kill it, and I'll be there to watch. You say you hate the berserkers, but if you thought you could breed them into your clan, you might feel differently.
Gavril MacIlliac killed my brothers, Ramsay said tightly. Religion or not, I'll suffer no qualms about killing his son. Or daughter.
Good.
Connor McCain looked down into the valley at the sleeping village of Tuluth.
The city is much larger now, Logan. What's your plan?
You mentioned there are caves in the mountain. Once I've captured the woman, I'll give you a piece of the clothing she's wearing. You take it and confront the old man and Gavril. They won't fight as long as they know I have Jillian. You'll send him to the caves, and I'll take care of it from there.
How?
I said I will take care of it from there, Ramsay growled.
I want to see his dead body with my own eyes.
You will.
Ramsay joined Connor behind the shelter of a bluff. The two of them stared down at Castle Maldaban.
Such a waste of beauty and strength on heathens. When they are defeated, the McCain will take Maldaban.
Connor breathed.
When I have done as I promised, the Logan take Maldaban,
Ramsay said with an icy gaze that dared Connor to disagree. Chapter 31. When Jillian awoke the next morning, she immediately became aware of two things. She missed Grimm terribly, and she had what women called breeding woes. As she curled on her side and cradled her stomach, she couldn't believe she had failed to recognize her malady the previous morning. Although she'd suspected she was pregnant, she must have been so distracted by worries of how she would maneuver Grimm to Maldaban that she hadn't pieced the facts together, and realized she had the morning nausea the maids at Caithness had often complained of. The thought of suffering it every morning depressed her, but the confirmation that she was carrying Grimm's child replaced her discomfort with elation. She couldn't wait to share the wonderful news with him. A sudden alarming ache in her stomach nearly made her reevaluate her joy. She indulged herself in a loud, self-pitying groan. Curling into a ball helped, as did the consolation that, from what she'd heard, such illness was usually of brief duration. And it was. After about 30 minutes, it passed as suddenly as it had assaulted her. She was surprised to discover she felt hearty and hale, as if she'd not suffered a moment of queasiness. She brushed her long hair, tied it back in a ribbon, then sat gazing sadly at the ruins of her wedding gown. They'd left Caithness with nothing but the dress on her body. The only items of clothing in her chambers were that and the Douglas plaid that Grimm had bundled around her. Well, she wasn't going to be denied breakfast by a lack of clothing, she decided swiftly, not when her tummy was so temperamental. A few moments and a few strategic knots later, she was wrapped Scott-style in a plaid and ready to make her way to the Great Hall. Ronan, Balder, and Grimm were already at breakfast, eating in strained silence. Jillian chirped a cheery good morning. The morose group clearly needed a stiff dose of gaiety. The three men leapt to their feet, jostling for the honor of seating her. She bestowed it upon Grimm with a bright smile.
"Good morning," she purred, her eyes wandering over him hungrily.
She wondered if her newfound knowledge of their child growing within her glittered in her eyes. She simply had to get him alone soon. He froze, her chair half pulled out.
"Morning,"
he whispered huskily, stupidly, dazzled by her radiance.
"Och, Jillian, you have no other clothes, do ye?"
He eyed her clad in his plaid and smiled tenderly.
"I recall you dressing like this when you were wee. You were determined to be just like your da."
He seated her, his hands lingering on her shoulders.
"Balder, can you set the maids to finding something Jillian might wear?"
It was Ronan who replied.
"I'm certain some of Jolin's gowns could be altered. I had them sealed away."
His eyes clouded with sorrow. Gillian was astonished when Grimm's jaw tensed. He dropped into his seat and fisted his hand around his mug so tightly his knuckles whitened. Although Grimm had told her a few things about his family, he'd not told her how Jolyn had died. Nor had he told her what Ronan had done to carve such a chasm between the two of them. From what she'd seen of his da, there was nothing remotely strange or mad about him. He seemed a gentle man, filled with regrets and longing for a better future with his son. She realized Balder was watching Grimm as intently as she was.
"Did you ever hear the fable of the wolf in sheep's clothing, lad?"
Balder asked, eyeing Grimm with displeasure.
"Aye," he growled. "I became well acquainted with that moral at an early age."
Again he flashed a look of fury at Ronan.
"Then you should be understanding sometimes it works in reverse. There's such a thing as a sheep in wolf's clothing, too. Sometimes appearances can be misleading. Sometimes you have to re-examine the facts with mature eyes."
Gillian eyed them curiously. There was a message being conveyed that she didn't understand.
"Gillian loves fables,"
Grimm muttered, urging the subject in a new direction.
"Well, tell us one, lass,"
Ronan encouraged. Gillian blushed.
"No, really, I couldn't. It's the children who love fables so much."
"Bah, children, she says, Balder,"
Ronan exclaimed.
"My Jolyn loved fables and told us them often. Come on, lass, give us a story."
"Well,"
she demurred.
"Tell us one. Go on," the brothers urged.
Beside her, Grimm took a deep swallow from his mug and slammed it down on the table. Gillian flinched inwardly, but refused to react. He'd been stomping and glowering ever since they'd arrived, and she couldn't fathom why. Seeking a way to lessen the palpable tension, she rummaged through her stock of fables and, struck by an impish impulse, selected a tale.
"Once there was a mighty lion, heroic and invincible. He was king of the beasts, and he knew it well. A bit arrogant, one might say, but a good king just the same."
She paused to smile warmly at Grimm. He scowled.
"This mighty lion was walking in the forest of the lowlands one evening when he spied a lovely woman."
"With waves of golden hair and amber eyes,"
Balder interjected.
"Why, yes! How did you know? You've heard this one, haven't you, Balder?"
Grimm rolled his eyes. Gillian stifled an urge to laugh and continued.
"The mighty lion was mesmerized by her beauty, by her gentle ways, and by the lovely song she was singing. He padded forward quietly so he wouldn't startle her. But the maiden wasn't frightened. She saw the lion for what he was, a powerful, courageous, and honorable creature with an often fearsome roar, who possessed a pure, fearless heart. His arrogance she could overlook, because she knew from watching her own father that arrogance was often part and parcel of extraordinary strength."
Gillian sneaked a quick glance at Ronan. He was grinning broadly. Drawing succor from Ronan's amusement, she looked directly at Grimm and continued.
"The lion was besotted. The next day he sought out the woman's father and pledged his heart, seeking her hand in marriage. The woman's father was concerned about the lion's beastly nature, despite the fact that his daughter was perfectly comfortable with it. Unknown to the daughter, her father agreed to accept the lion's courtship, provided the lion king allowed him to pluck his claws and pull his teeth, rendering him tame and civilized. The lion was hopelessly in love. He agreed, and so it was done."
"Another Samson and Delilah,"
Grimm muttered. Gillian ignored him.
"When the lion then pressed his case, the father drove him from his home with sticks and stones, because the beast was no longer a threat, no longer a fearsome creature."
Gillian paused significantly, and Balder and Ronan clapped their hands.
"Wonderfully told,"
Ronan exclaimed. "That was a favorite of my wife's as well."
Grimm scowled.
"That's the end. Just what the hell was the point of that story?"
he asked, offended.
"That loving makes a man weaker? That he loses the woman he loves when she sees him unmanned?"
Ronan gave him a disparaging glance.
"No, lad. The point of that fable is that even the mighty can be humbled by love.
Wait, there's more.
Their daughter, Gillian said quietly,
moved by his willingness to trust so completely, fled Hadad's house, and wed her Lion King.
She understood Grimm's fear now. Whatever secret he was hiding, he was afraid that once she discovered it, she would leave him.
I still think that's a terrible story, Grimm thundered, waving his hand angrily. It caught his mug and sent it flying across the table, spraying Ronan with cider wine. Grimm stared at the bright red stain spreading on his Da's white linen for a long, strained moment.
Excuse me, he said roughly,
pushing his chair back and, without another glance, loping from the room.
Ah, lass, he can be a handful sometimes, I fear,
Ronan said with an apologetic look, mopping at his shirt with a cloth. Gillian poked at her breakfast.
I wish I understood what was going on.
She shot a hopeful glance at the brothers.
You haven't asked him, have you? Balder remarked.
I want to ask him, but...
But you understand he may not be able to give you answers, because he doesn't seem to have them himself, does he?
I just wish he'd talk to me about it. If not to me, then at least to you,
she said to Ronan.
There's so much pent up inside him, and I have no idea what to do but give him time.
He loves you, lass, Ronan assured her. It's in his eyes, in the way he touches you, in the way he moves when you're around. You're the center of his heart.
I know, she said simply. I don't doubt that he loves me, but trust is part and parcel of love.
Balder turned a piercing gaze on his brother.
Ronan is going to speak with him today, aren't you, brother?
He rose from the table.
I'll get you a fresh shirt, he added, and left the great hall.
Ronan removed his cider-soaked shirt, draped it over a chair, and mopped his body with a linen cloth. The cider had doused him thoroughly. Gillian watched him curiously. His torso was well-defined and powerful. His chest was broad, darkened by years of Highland sun, and dusted with hair like Grimm's. And like Grimm's, it was free of scars or birthmarks, a vast, unblemished expanse of olive-tinted skin. She couldn't help herself. She stared, perplexed by the fact that there was not a single scar on the torso of a man who'd allegedly fought dozens of battles while wearing no more protection than his plaid, if he fought in the usual Scots manner. Even her father had a scar or two on his chest. She stared uncomprehendingly until she realized Ronan wasn't moving, but was watching her watch him.
"The last time a pretty lass looked at my chest was over 15 years ago," he teased.
Gillian's gaze flew to his face. He was regarding her tenderly.
"Was that how long ago your wife died?"
Ronan nodded.
"Jolyn was the loveliest woman I've ever seen, and a truer heart I've never known."
"How did you lose her?"
she asked gently. Ronan regarded her impassively.
"Was it in the battle?"
she persisted.
Ronan studied his shirt. "I fear this shirt's ruined."
She tried another route, one he might be willing to discuss.
"But surely in 15 years you've met other women, haven't you?"
"There's only one for us, lass. And after she's gone, there can never be another."
"You mean you've never been with... in 15 years you've..."
She broke off, embarrassed by the direction the conversation was taking, but she couldn't suppress her curiosity. She knew men often remarried after their wives died. If they didn't, it was considered natural that they took mistresses. Was this man saying he'd been utterly alone for 15 years?
"There's only one in here."
Ronan thumped a fist against his chest.
"We only love once, and we're no good to a woman without love,"
he said with quiet dignity.
"My son knows that, at least."
Gillian's eyes fixed on his chest again, and she remarked upon the cause of her consternation.
"Grimm said the McCain split your chest open with a battle axe."
Ronan's eyes darted away.
"I heal well. And it's been 15 years, lass."
He shrugged as if that should explain all. Gillian stepped closer and stretched out a wondering hand. Ronan moved away.
The sun darkening my skin covers a lot of scars, and there's the hair as well, he said quickly.
Too quickly for Gillian's peace of mind.
But I don't even see a hint of a scar, she protested.
According to Grimm, the axe had been buried to the thick wedge of the hilt. Not only couldn't most men survive that, such an injury would have left a thick ridge of hard, white tissue.
Grimm said you'd been in many battles. One would think you'd have at least one or two scars to show. Come to think of it, she wondered aloud, Grimm doesn't have any scars either. Anywhere. As a matter of fact, I don't think I've ever seen a small cut on that man. Does he never hurt himself? Slip while shaving that stubborn jaw? Stub his toe? Tear a hangnail?
She knew her voice was rising, but couldn't help it.
We, Mac-Iliac, enjoy excellent health.
Ronan fidgeted with his tartan, unrolled a fold, and draped it across his chest.
Apparently,
Gillian responded, her mind far away. She forced herself back with an effort.
My lord.
Ronan.
Ronan, is there something you'd like to tell me about your son?
Ronan sighed and regarded her somberly.
Ach, and is there, he admitted. But I can, alas. He must tell you himself.
Why doesn't he trust me?
It's not you he doesn't trust, lass,
Balder said, entering the great hall with a fresh shirt. Like Grimm, he moved silently.
It's that he doesn't trust himself.
Gillian eyed Grimm's uncle. Her gaze darted between him and Ronan. There was something indefinable nagging at the back of her mind, but she simply couldn't put her finger on it. They were both watching her intently, almost hopefully. But what were they hoping for? Baffled, Gillian finished her cider and placed the goblet on a nearby table.
I suppose I should go find Grimm.
Just do not go looking down the central hall, Gillian,
Balder said quickly, regarding her intently.
He rarely goes there, but if he does, it's because he's wishing for some privacy.
The central hall?
Gillian's brow furrowed.
I thought this was the central hall.
She waved her arm at the great hall, where they'd dined.
No, this is the front hall. I mean the one that runs off the back of the castle. Actually, it tunnels right into the heart of the mountain itself. It's where he used to run to when he was a boy.
Oh,
she inclined her head.
Thank you,
she added, but had no idea what she was thanking him for. His cryptic comment seemed to have been issued as a deterrent, but it sounded suspiciously like an invitation to snoop. She shook her head briskly and excused herself, consumed by curiosity. After she left, Ronan grinned at Balder.
He never went there when he was a boy. He hasn't even seen the Hall of Lords yet. You're a sneaky bastard, you are,
he exclaimed admiringly.
I always told you I got the lion's share of brains in the family.
Balder preened and poured them both another glass of cider.
Are the torches lit, Ronan? You left it unlocked, didn't you?
Course I did. You didn't get all the brains. But, Balder, what if she can't figure it out? Or worse, can't accept it?
That woman has a head on her shoulders, brother. She's fairly bursting with questions, but she keeps her tongue. Not because she's meek, but out of love for your boy. She's dying to know what happened here 15 years ago, and she's waiting patiently for Gavril to tell her. So we'll be giving her the answers another way to be certain she's prepared when he finally speaks.
Balder paused and regarded his brother sternly.
You didn't used to be such a coward, Ronan. Stop waiting for him to come to you. Go to him as you wish you had years ago. Do it, Ronan.
Gillian made a beeline for the central hall, or as much of a beeline as she was capable of, given that wandering around inside Castle Maldivion was akin to roaming an uncharted city. She navigated confusing corridors, proceeding in the direction she hoped led back toward the mountain, determined to find the central hall. It was obvious Balder and Ronan wished her to see it. Would it give her answers about Grimm? After 30 minutes of frustrated searching, she looped through a series of twisting hallways and around a corner that opened into a second great hall, even larger than the one she'd breakfasted in. She stepped forward hesitantly,
The hall was definitely old, perhaps as ancient as the standing stones erected by the mystical druids. Someone had conveniently lit torches. The interfering brothers, she concluded gratefully, for there was not one window in this part of the structure, and how could there be? This great hall was actually inside the belly of the mountain. She shivered, rattled by the idea. She crossed the huge room slowly, drawn by the mysterious double doors set into the wall at the other end. They towered above her, wrapped in bands of steel, and above the arched opening bold letters had been chiseled.
"Deo non fortuna,"
she whispered, driven by the same impulse to speak in hushed tones that she'd suffered in Caithness's chapel. She pressed against the massive doors and held her breath as they swung inward, revealing the central hall Balder had spoken of. Wide-eyed, she moved forward with the dreamy gait of a sleepwalker, riveted by what lay before her. The flowing lines of the hall commanded the eyes upward, and she pivoted slowly, arching her head back and marveling at the ceiling. Pictures and murals covered the vast expanse, some of them so vibrant and realistic that her hands begged to touch them. A chill coursed through her as she tried to comprehend what she was seeing. Was she gazing up at centuries of the history of the Maciliac? She dragged her gaze downward, only to discover new wonders. The walls of the hall held portraits, hundreds of them. Gillian glided along the wall. It took only a few moments for her to realize she was walking down a historical genealogy, a timeline done in portraits. The first pictures were chiseled in stone, some directly into the wall, with names carved beneath them. Odd names she couldn't begin to pronounce. As she worked her way down the hall, the methods of depiction became more modern, as did the clothing. It was apparent that much care had been given to repainting and restoring the portraits to maintain their accuracy over the centuries. As she progressed down the timeline toward the present, the portraits became more graphically detailed, which deepened her growing sense of confusion. Colors were brighter, more painstakingly applied. Her eyes darting between portraits, she moved forward and back again, comparing portraits of children to their subsequent adult portraits. She must be mistaken. Incredulous, Gillian closed her eyes a minute, then opened them slowly and stepped back a few paces to study an entire section. It couldn't be. Grabbing a torch, she moved nearer, peering intently at a cluster of boys at their mother's skirts. They were beautiful boys, dark-haired, brown-eyed boys who would certainly grow into dangerously handsome men. She moved to the next portraits, and there they were again, dark-haired, blue-eyed, dangerously handsome men. Eyes didn't change color. Gillian retraced her steps and studied the woman in the last portrait. She was a stunning, auburn-haired woman with five brown-eyed boys at her skirts. Gillian then moved to her right. It was either the same woman or her identical twin. Five men clustered around her in various poses, all looking directly at the artist, leaving no doubt as to the color of their eyes. Ice blue. The names beneath the portraits were the same. She moved farther down the hall, bewildered, until she found the 16th century. Unfortunately, the portraits raised more questions than they answered, and she sank to her knees in the hall for a long time, thinking. Hours passed before she managed to sort through it all to her satisfaction. When she had, no question remained in her mind. She was an intelligent woman, able to exercise her powers of deductive reasoning with the best of them, and those powers told her that, though it defied her every rational thought, there was simply no other explanation. She was sitting on her knees, clad in a disheveled plaid, clutching a nearly burned-out torch, in a hall filled with berserkers. Chapter 32. Grimm paced the terrace, feeling like a fool. He'd sat across the table and shared food with his da, managing to make civil conversation until Gillian had arrived. Then Ronan had mentioned Jolin, and he'd felt fury rise up so quickly he'd nearly lunged across the table and grabbed the old man by the throat. But Grimm was intelligent enough to realize that much of the anger he felt was at himself. He needed information, and was afraid to ask. He needed to talk to Gillian, but what could he tell her?
He had no answers himself.
"Confront your Da," his conscience demanded. "Find out what really happened."
The idea terrified him. If he discovered he was wrong, his entire world would look radically different. Besides, he had other things to worry about. He had to make certain Jillian didn't discover what he was, and he needed to warn Balder that the McCain were on his heels. He needed to get Jillian somewhere safe before they attacked, and he needed to figure out why he, his uncle, and his Da were all berserkers. It just seemed too coincidental, and Balder kept alluding to information he didn't possess, information he couldn't ask for.
"Son?"
Grimm spun around.
"Dunna call me that,"
he snapped. But the protest didn't carry its usual venom. Ronan expelled a gust of air.
"Aye. We need to talk.
It's too late. You said all you had to say years ago."
Ronan crossed the terrace and joined Grimm at the wall.
"Tuluth is beautiful, isn't she?"
he asked softly. Grimm didn't reply.
"Lad, I... Ronan, did you..."
The two men looked at each other searchingly. Neither noticed as Balder stepped out onto the terrace.
"Why did you leave and never come back?"
The words burst from Ronan's lips with the pent-up anguish of 15 years of waiting to say them.
"Why did I leave?"
Grimm echoed incredulously.
"Was it because you were afraid of what you'd become?"
"What I became? I never became what you are!"
Ronan gaped at him.
"How can you be saying that when you have the blue eyes? You have the bloodlust!" "I know I'm a berserker,"
Grimm replied evenly. "But I'm not insane."
Ronan blinked.
"I never said you were."
"You did, too. That night at the battle you told me I was just like you,"
he reminded bitterly.
"And you are."
"I am not."
"Yes, you are.
You killed my mother!"
Grimm roared, with all the anguish built up from 15 years of waiting.